Okay.
Let's begin. A week from this coming Shabbos is Parshas Zachar. What's the story with Parshas Zachar? There is a mitzvah to say midoraita. Zachar is asher asal lecha malek badarach b'tzeischem mimitzrayim, that one has to remember what Amalek did. Now that's clearly a mitzvah midoraita. However, the fact that on the Shabbos before Purim, we take out a Sefer Torah, and at the end of the regular Kriya Satorah, we have a special Kriya Satorah, reading this Parsha out loud from a Sefer Torah to Minyan, that is debatable what the status of that mitzvah is. According to the Rambam, and sees from the Ramban, the reading of Parsha Zachar, week from Shabbos, is a mitzvah midrabbanan. The Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, claims that no, reading Parsha Zachar from a Sefer Torah with the Minyan is actually part of the mitzvah midoraita, and that seems to be the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. But there clearly is a mitzvah to read Parsha Zachar, and we'll be doing it the week from this coming Shabbos. Now, are women chayav in hearing Parsha Zachar? Before we answer that question, we have to answer the first question, which is, are women chayav in the mitzvah of Zachar et asher asah lecha Amalek, the Torah's mitzvah, right? To remember what Amalek did, are women chayav? The Sefer HaChinuch says that women are pater from that mitzvah. Why? That mitzvah is a mitzvah to say, shalom hazman gramat, always remember what Amalek did, it doesn't have a special time. Why would women be pater? Says the Sefer HaChinuch, because the reason behind the mitzvah of remembering what Amalek did is in order to encourage us, to, when necessary, to go out to war and to take revenge against Amalek. Since women are pater from going to war, therefore, they don't have to remember what Amalek did, because the whole idea behind the mitzvah remembering is to then go out and go to war. That's the Sefer HaChinuch. Hundreds of years later, the Minchas Chinuch wrote a very famous perush on the Sefer HaChinuch, and the Minchas Chinuch challenges that on a number of different points. One of the points that he raises is, who's to say that the whole reason behind the mitzvah of remembering what Amalek did is to go out to war? Secondly, he says, and even if you're going to say that, we know that women, the Gemara seems to say that women are chayav to participate in a melchemet mitzvah. Now that point is challenged by other achronim who claim that when it says that women have to participate in a melchemet mitzvah, that may not mean going out to fight. It may mean just being the support group back home and supplying whatever needs are, but not necessarily to go out to fight. In any event, the bottom line would be as follows. If women are part of from the mitzvah d'oraita of Zachar, like the Sefer HaChinuch, presumably they'll be part of from listening to Parshat Zachar. If they're chayiv in the mitzvah d'oraita of Zachar, then one could argue one way or the other. Maybe they're chayiv in listening to Parshat Zachar, maybe they're not chayiv because it's Kriya Satorah, and women in general are part of from Kriya Satorah. The bottom line is, it's a machloket achronim. The Binyan Siya under Moshe Feinstein, that seems to be the opinion of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and a number of other poskim, say that women are chayef to hear Parshas Zachar. The Chazon Ish, the Avni Nezer of the Kaf HaChaim, the opinion women are pater from hearing Parshas Zachar. At the end of the day, it's been, in the last few decades, it's been very, very common in many shuls to make every effort that women can hear Parshas Zachar, so they often have a second reading. For women who have, let's say, are at home with young children and aren't able to come to the regular Kriya Satorah, so they have a second reading, the husbands go home, the wives come, and they have a second reading of Parsha Zachar, and certainly, because according to quite a number of prominent poskim in archive, you should make every effort to hear Parsha Zachar. That's a week from this coming Shabbos. Okay, questions regarding Parsha Zachar? Okay.
If you
try,
is it an actual
field? So that's a machloket poskim. So you should try, you should make an effort to hear Parsha Zachar a week from Shabbos. 2 weeks from yesterday, right, is Tanit Esther. I think I got my dates right. Tanit Esther is on a Monday. So 2 weeks from yesterday is Tanit Esther. Tanit Esther is not, first of all, why do we fast now? Really, the name is a little bit odd because we know from the Megillah that Esther fasted, but she didn't fast in the month of Adar. She actually fasted in the month of Nisan. That's when the story happened that she went to Achashverosh, etc. We fast on Yud Gimel Adar, the day before regular Purim, and that's because that's the day that that's the day that Haman had decided to kill the Jews. The Jews were able to defend themselves. That's the day they went to war. And the minhag that was to, when you went to war, to make sure that you had siyata d'shmaya, so people used to fast on the day that they went to war. So zecha for that fast that we went to war and we had a Yeshua, so we fast on Tanis Esther. It is a mandatory fast. It's not an optional fast. Anybody who's healthy is required to fast. We're a little bit more lenient on what we call somebody who isn't so healthy regarding Tanis Esther as opposed to other Tanios, because this Tanis is not mentioned explicitly, at least in Tanakh. But otherwise, if a person is healthy, they should be fasting on Tanis Esther. I guess right before the Tanis, they'll put up the times when the fast begins, when the fast ends. So just keep that in mind. And now we begin the halachos that I wouldn't say that you're not familiar with, but probably very few of you have experienced. There's an old joke which isn't accurate, but it's when you make aliyah, right? So instead of keeping 2 days Yom Tov, you keep 1 day Yom Tov. And instead of keeping 1 day Purim, you keep 2 days Purim. Now, it's not accurate at all, as you'll see in a moment. But it's important to know that date on the on the calendar that you were familiar with from way back when, there was a day called Purim and there was another day called Shushan Purim. And Purim, you didn't have school, and Shushan Purim, you probably did have school. Maybe you came to dressed up, maybe you didn't, I don't know what. But here in Eretz Yisrael, especially in Yerushalayim, things are very, very different. So let's do a little bit of background. The Megillah tells us that Haman, as I mentioned just now, Haman had done a goral, a pur, had drawn lots, and the day that he decided he was going to destroy all the Jews was the 13th day of Adar, Yigimel Adar. That's the day that fell out on the pur. After the whole thing happens with Esther going to Achashverosh and the parties and another party and etc., and then Haman gets hung, so they go to Achashverosh and they ask permission. They can't rescind the order because whatever the decree the king has issued can't be rescinded, but they were given permission to defend themselves. So comes Yud Gimel Adar, 11 months later approximately, and the Jews defend themselves and they kill many, many of Haman's cohorts who Midrashim tell us were Mizera Amalek, and the battle was on Yud Gimel Adar. Most of the Jews after the battle on Yud Gimel Adar celebrated on Yud Dalet Adar, but Esther asked for special permission to take care of some more of Haman's co-conspirators who were in Shushan, the capital city. And therefore in Shushan, the Jews fought not only on Yud Gimel, but also on Yud Dalet. And therefore they only rested and celebrated on Tetvav. So all the other cities celebrated on Yud Dalet, and in Shushan they celebrated on Tetvav. Now they want to be Koveya, a holiday Ladorot, for generations. And they came up with the following. They said we should really commemorate both celebrations, what most of the people did, and also the celebration in Shushan. Now logic would dictate that, so let's everybody celebrate on Yud Dalet, and let the people in Shushan celebrate on Tetvav. But the people in Shushan, if it's only going to be one city, who knows? Hopefully we can be coming out of Golas, and then nobody, there won't be any commemoration. So let's match up, I'll take it, let's match up the cities that were like Shushan. Without getting into why exactly this is so, but they decided that Shushan was a city that was surrounded by a wall, and therefore all cities that were surrounded by a wall would celebrate the same day that Shushan celebrates on Tetvav. When did they have to be surrounded by a wall? So if you say they had to be surrounded by a wall at the time of the miracle of Purim, which makes perfect sense, but at that time there wasn't a single city in all of Eretz Yisrael that had a wall. Why not? Because it was after Churban Bayis Rishon, before they went back and rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash, and if all the cities were in a state of Churban. And if we were to create a halacha, all cities that had a wool at the time of Purim would celebrate on Tetvav, that would mean there wouldn't be a single city in all of Eretz Yisrael that would celebrate on Tetvav. And not only that, it would remind people of Churban instead of reminding us of Yeshua. So they said, okay, we'll make it any city in the world that had a choma surrounded by a wall from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun, who was the first person to fight against Amalek, but any city that had a wall from that time would celebrate on Tetvav. Every other city would celebrate on Yudalit. There are a number of cities, locations, where it's questionable whether they had a wall at the time of Yehoshua ben Nun or didn't. And what we mean is sometimes we know that the old city, the ancient city, had a wall, but we don't know whether the city nowadays is where the ancient city was. There was only one city in the entire world where we are certain that it had a wall at the time of Yehoshua ben Nun, and we're certain where that city was located. And that city is Yerushalayim. And therefore, the only city in the world that definitively celebrates on Tetvav, there are some cities that celebrate Yudalan and Tetvav Misafek, but the one that definitively celebrates on Tetvav is Yerushalayim. Even in Yerushalayim, there was question about some of the outlying neighborhoods of Yerushalayim. Pretty much nowadays, most poskim say all the neighborhoods of Yerushalayim celebrate on Tetvav. I think there are some people in Ramot, the far out sections of Ramot, who may celebrate both Yudalan and Tetvav, but pretty much everybody celebrates in Yerushalayim on Tetvav. Now, if you're celebrating on Tetvav, you're not celebrating on Yudalid. And generally speaking, unless you're in one of those Safek cities, if you're celebrating on Yudalid, you're not celebrating on Tetvav. But what happens if a person starts traveling? Is it possible to put yourself in a situation where you're chayv to celebrate both? Is it possible to put yourself in a situation where you're, which would be very odd, where you're not chayv to celebrate either? Okay, so listen carefully, because this is going to affect a lot of you. This is the bottom line, according to most poskim. Everything depends on Alot HaShachar, on dawn, on the 14th of Adar, and dawn on the 15th of Adar. Meaning, if on dawn, Alot HaShachar, on the 14th of Adar, you are located in Yerushalayim, which most of you will be, then you are in a Ir Mukefet Choma on the 14th, you don't celebrate the 14th. If you are at Alot HaShachar on the 15th of Adar, you're in Yerushalayim, then you will celebrate the 15th. This is what's going to apply pretty much everybody here. On the morning of the 14th, on the morning of the 15th, you're going to be here. So because on the morning of the 14th in Yerushalayim, you're not celebrating the 14th, and because on the morning of the 15th, you're in Yerushalayim, you will be celebrating the 15th. So far, so good. But if you happen to leave MMY on Tanit Esther, and you slept over at Aunt Shuli's house in Ranana on the 14th, and woke up in Ranana on the morning of the 14th of Adar, then you have to celebrate the 14th of Adar, which means you have to hear Megillah at night, you have to hear Megillah during the day, you have to say Al HaNisim, you have to do Mishloach Manot, Matanot Lev Yonim, Seuda, the whole thing. And then, if you left Aunt Shuli's house on the afternoon of the 14th in Ranana, and you came back to MMY and slept over in the dorm on MMY and woke up on the morning of the 15th here, then you have to do everything all over again. You have to hear Megillah at night, you have to hear Megillah during the day, you have to do Mishloach Manos, Matanos Lev Yonim, Seuda. So in theory, you could put yourself in a situation where you're chayav double Purim. And that would be that you slept over outside Yerushalayim on the night of the 14th, meaning you woke up on the morning of the 14th outside Yerushalayim, and you slept over in Yerushalayim on the night of the 15th, they woke up in Yerushalayim in the morning of the 15th. In that situation, you would be chayav double Purim. But if you don't go to Aunt Shuli's house, or the following, you slept over in the dorm the night and woke up in the morning of the 14th here. On the 14th during the day, you went for a couple of hours to Alon Shvut to see the parade. I think they still do that. Maybe they will. They'll tell you about it. You want to see the parade. You were outside Yerushalayim for a few hours in the middle of the day on the 14th. But you're only outside in the middle of the day. Do you have to celebrate the 14th? No. Because at dawn of the 14th, you were in Yerushalayim. You were sleeping very soundly in your bed. And then you went out for a few hours. You went to Beit Shemesh, you went to Alon Shvut, you went to Bnei Brak, you went to Ranana, you went to Eilat for a couple of hours, whatever it might be. And then you got back to MMY, so you wouldn't be celebrating the 14th. Questions? Yes.
So if you wake up on the 14th and you're in
Ranana. Where? You're in Ranana.
You're in Ranana. That means you lost your, you didn't fulfill your chiyuv of hearing Megillah during the night.
If you plan to wake up on the 14th, on the morning of the 14th in Ranana, then you have to make sure that you're hearing the Megillah on the night of the 14th. You have to plan it, because otherwise you blew it. Yes?
We're in Yerushalayim for the second day of Purim.
Yeah.
We fast on Yud Gimel, and then there's just a...
Tanit Esther, right. If you stay in Yerushalayim the whole time, for argument's sake, right? Tanit Esther for the whole world is going to be on Monday. Tuesday is a neutral day. Right. It's not anything. You won't say Tachanun. That's about it. It's a neutral day. And you don't do very much. I know the families who live in Yerushalayim used to go on Tiyolim. Because nobody's on Tiyolim. Everybody's busy celebrating Purim. So they would go on a Tiyol. Just have to make sure you come back on time. By the way, that's very, very crucial. If you leave Yerushalayim on Yudalid, you must make sure to come back on time to hear Megillah. Because if you miss it, you're going to be in big trouble. Yeah. In theory, if a person did the following, you slept over on the night of the 14th and woke up in the morning of the 14th in Yerushalayim.
Okay.
Then you went to Aunt Shuli's house in Ranana on the day of the 14th, and you stayed overnight in Ranana and woke up in the morning of the 15th in Ranana. So on the morning of the 14th, you were in Yerushalayim, you're not chayav on the 14th. On the morning of the 15th, you were in Ranana, you're not chayav on the 15th. You missed all of Purim. And you blew it. And anybody who does this intentionally, I once heard in the name of Rav Neuwirth Zatzal, the author of Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, this is in the category of what the Ramban calls a novel Bershus HaTorah. Somebody who does this intentionally is a novel Bershus HaTorah. Now, there are stories where it doesn't happen intentionally. I'll give you an example. You live in Beit Shemesh. Your wife goes into labor on the night of the 14th. So you travel with your wife, and she's giving birth in Shaarei Tzedek. So you're all night in Shaarei Tzedek, and you wake up in the morning of the 14th, and you don't wake up, you didn't go to sleep, but in the dawn of the 14th, you're in Shaarei Tzedek. So you're not chayiv in the 14th, because you're in Yerushalayim. But this is your fourth kid, or maybe your 14th kid. There are 13 kids back home who need their Abba. So what do you need to do? You need to sleep. You need to go back home. So you go back home, and you sleep over on the night of the 15th, back in Beit Shemesh. And you wake up in the morning of the 15th, Beit Shemesh, and you miss Purim here, and you miss Purim there. This is what Chazal referred to as Kerech Mikan, the Kerech Mikan. You're bored from this way, you're bored from this way, you missed out both. So sometimes it happens unintentionally. But otherwise, you have to make every effort to make sure it doesn't happen. Yes?
So the fasting, I don't know if this is just like a thing, I don't know, but like, we didn't stop fasting until we've heard Megillah.
Right, so now you have to fast for 48 hours straight. No. That's only, right. If you're not chayev on the 14th, then as soon as the fast is over, you can have a 7-course meal. You only can't have your 7-course meal. Woo! Okay. See? Talent show. Okay. You only can't have your 7-course meal if you're chayev to hear Megillah right after the fast. But if you're in Yerushalayim and you're planning to stay overnight in Yerushalayim, then you don't have to. Yes?
Can you intentionally do a double Purim?
Yes, you can. There's nothing wrong with intentionally doing a double Purim, but just keep in mind, many people don't mind having two Su'udot. Right? Having double Mishloach Manot, giving double Mishloach Manot and double Matanot Levyon, it may not be such a big deal. But hearing Megillah four times without missing a word, make sure you want to do that. I'm serious. It's sometimes Megillah is really nice. Once, twice, third time, fourth time, right? So make sure you want to really do that. Okay, we'll save some questions for later. Let's go on. Women and the mitzvah of Megillah. Even though reading Megillah is a mitzvah d'aseisha hazman grama, obviously it's time dependent. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us explicitly that women are chayv in the mitzvah of Megillah because they were either the main people behind the miracle. In the case of Purim, it would be Esther, or they benefited from the Nes because Haman was out. Right? So either way, women are chayv in the mitzvah of Megillah. Now, can a woman be motzi a man in the reading of Megillah? The general rule is, for person A to be motzi person B in a mitzvah, what's the requirement? That person A is going to be motzi B has to either have the same level requirement or a higher, a greater level. Right? Somebody whose level of chiyuv in the mitzvah is lower cannot be motzi somebody whose level in the chiyuv is higher. When it came to Ner Chanukah, we pointed out that the level was the same, and therefore a woman can be motzi a man in Ner Chanukah. When it comes to Purim, it's not so clear. It's a machloket arishonim. Rashi and the Rambam are of the opinion that the chiyuv of women regarding Megillah is identical to the chiyuv of men, and therefore a woman can be motzi a man in Megillah. The Baal Halachot Gedolot, referred to by his initials, Bahag, is of the opinion that the level of chiyuv of a woman in Mikra Megillah is slightly lower than the level of chiyuv of a man, and therefore a woman cannot be motzi a man in the reading of Megillah. The Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, quotes both opinions. The Rama seems to lean towards the second opinion, that a woman should not be motzi a man because of the opinion of the Bahag, and therefore that is how we paskin bottom line, that the woman is not to read the Megillah for a man because she may not be able to be fully motzi him. Of course, if you have some rare exception, I don't know, you know how to read Megillah and you're with your grandfather and there's nobody else to read the Megillah for your grandfather, you're the only one in the world, then you should read it because, at least according to Rashi and the Rambam, he'd be yotze. But otherwise, we don't do that. Regarding women reading Megillah for women, I think Rabbi Katz is giving a shiur tomorrow, I think, maybe?
Yeah.
So he's going to discuss this at great length. Poskim deal with this issue about women reading Megillah for other women, what the issues are, Korban Nesanel, and Avshalom Zalman, and Magen Avram, and Medrash HaNe'elam, etc. There's a lot to talk about. I'm going to leave most of that for Rabbi Katz. Just tell you a story, if I have Talia and Shira's permission, of a story about their grandfather. You know the story?
Maybe.
Okay. So he, in an article that he wrote once, he told the story that he wasn't sure if it was in 1979 or 1980. The question came up about women reading Megillah for women. And so his question, he had the question, Rabbi Riskin had the question, Rabbi Riskin asked him to go ask the Rav. So he said he called up the Rav and he asked Rav Soloveitchik whether he can have it, and the Rav told him no. At which point, Rabbi Shachter, that's their grandfather, started discussing with the Rav what the issues were, back and forth, and he was a little bit relentless, and the Rav wasn't budging. And finally, at some point, the Rav told him, and I wrote this down, so hopefully I'll call it correctly. He said to him, over the phone, he said to him, Shachter, if you want, I can give you a heter, but you shouldn't do it. That's what the Rav told him. Meaning that there, aside from all the technical issues involved, whether it's okay or not, the Rav was not at all happy with the idea, even technically it was mutter. He was not at all happy with the idea of having women reading Megillah for women. The rest, I'll leave to Rabbi Katz. Okay. Now, there's a certain important halachas that a person needs to know regarding Kriyas HaMegillah. The minhag is that although we stand when the brachos are recited at the beginning, otherwise one can sit for the reading of Megillah, and that's what most of the people generally do. Listening to Megillah over a microphone or over a telephone is very, very questionable. I won't tell you that there are, I won't say that nobody allows it, but there are very, very prominent poskim who say that you would not yotzei. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was adamant that one is not yotzei. Reb Moshe Feinstein leans towards saying one isn't yotzei. And therefore, it's a bad idea to be somewhere where, similarly to over the phone, or even in a shul with a microphone. I know some shuls do it, but it's really a bad idea. Because there are a number of prominent poskim who say that one's not yotzei. One should have in mind, obviously, which we assume we do, that to be yotzei with the reading of the Megillah and with the brachos. Now, the issue with Megillah is that it's not a little like Kriya Satorah or something. I missed a little bit here, missed a little bit there. Megillah is an all or nothing deal. Either you hear everything, or you're not yotzei. Now, sometimes in shul, you miss a couple of words here, a couple of words there, especially when they're making noise by Haman. Right? There is a solution. And the solution is that even though the Megillah must be read from a cloth, and you're not yotzei if you read the Megillah from a printed Tanakh, but if I only read some of the Megillah, a few words, a few psukim, as long as it's less than 50%, of the Megillah, even if I read it from a printed something, I could be yotzei. And therefore, if you're following along in a Tanakh, or you have a printed Megillah Esther, and you missed a few words, you can say them from the print, but everything has to be in order. You can't say, I missed the pasuk, I'm going to go back after Megillah and say it then. No, everything must be in order. Which means that if you miss the pasuk, you'll probably have to read at least two or maybe three psukim to catch up to the Baal Koreh, right, and get slightly ahead to take your breath and then follow along. So you can catch up a little bit, right, as long as it's less than 50%, but everything has to be in order. Which means if you walked into shul 10 seconds late, the Baal Koreh read the first pasuk of the Megillah, all is not lost. Right. You quickly grab and you just start reading, read correctly, until you catch up to where the Baal Koreh is. But if you walk into shul and you missed half of the Megillah, or a third of it, by the time you catch up, you'll have missed half of it, and you're sunk. You'll have to hear a different reading of the Megillah. There are a number of psukim that the custom is to recite out loud. Ishu diya b'shushan abira. Mordechai yatsa milfnei hamelech b'levush malchus la'yudim ma'isaor v'simcha v'sasim v'ikar, the last pasuk. And in many shuls, not all shuls, they also recite the Aseres B'nei Haman, that everybody, the Baal Koreh stops, everybody recites that, and then the Baal Koreh says it over again. Brachos on the Megillah. How many brachos do we recite on the Megillah? So it depends whether it depends. At night, everybody says three brachos. They are Shachianu is the third. Al Mikra Megillah is the first. That's afterwards. Sha'asa Nisim is the second. So Al Mikra Megillah, Sha'asa Nisim, and Shachianu. There's a machloket that we've shown him whether you recite, two of them you recite the next morning. The machloket is regarding which one? Shachianu. Whether Shachianu is repeated or not, it's a machloket we've shown him. Sfaradim don't repeat Shachianu, if I remember correctly. Ashkenazim do. And when we recite Shachianu during the day, we should have in mind the other mitzvot ayom, Suda Matanos Lavyonim and Mishloach Manos. There is also a bracha which is recited after the Megillah, so you should have either a sitter with you or something. It's a little bit of a lengthy bracha, Ravis Rivenu Adonis Dinenu. That's a bracha that's recited after the Megillah. Take questions in a moment. We add in on the day that we're celebrating Purim, whether it's Yudal or Tetvav. On that day, what do we add to our tefillah? What? Al Anisim, right? Make sure it's the Purim Al Anisim, not the Hanukkah one, right? We say Al Hanisim. We added into all the Shemona Esrei that we say on the day. We added into Birkat HaMazon. If you forgot to say it, do you repeat Shemona Esrei or Birkat HaMazon? No. But don't forget it, and then you won't come into the question. What's the story with Halal and Purim? We don't say Halal and Purim. The Gemara gives three reasons why we don't say Halal and Purim. Because instead of Halal, the Kriya Samagila is the Hilula, or the Nes happened outside of Eretz Yisrael. Aye, so did Yitzias Mitzrayim, but we hadn't entered into Eretz Yisrael yet. Once we entered into Eretz Yisrael, so then we only say Halal Nes that happened in Eretz Yisrael, not outside Eretz Yisrael. And the third reason is because the beginning of Halal would not be so accurate. We'd say Halaluka, Halalu, Avdei Hashem, and we were Avdei Achashverosh. And for those three reasons, we don't say Halal on Purim. There is, of course, there's no Musaf on Purim. There is a special Kriya Satara from the end of Parshas Amalek, right before Kriya Samagila, from the end of Parshas Beshalach. We read about Mechamas Amalek. Okay, before I get on to the other mitzvot Hayom, any questions about Mikra Megila Davening? Yes.
You said that if someone walks in late and they miss the first game, so they can catch up.
Mm-hmm. They should, assuming that they're going to catch up, they should make the brachos, even though it will delay them a little bit. That's why if you're running very late, you may not make it, but if you run just a little bit late, there is a machlok at achronim, what bracha women make if they're reading the Megillah by themselves. But without confusing you, since some say Al Mikra Megillah, if that's what's in your siddur, then you might as well say it. Yeah. You couldn't hear it.
Okay. What if
if you're listening, even if you weren't totally focused, so we assume that you heard it, you weren't just paying such great attention. But often, it depends on the shul, often the word just before Haman, the word just after Haman, or most probably the word Haman itself, you don't always hear. You have to hear the word Haman, even if they're making noise. Okay. Yeah.
Did you say Shachrina if you're keeping 2 days?
That's a very good question. I don't remember the answer. I remember Poskim talk about it. My gut feeling is you probably don't. I mean, if you're keeping your Dalet and Tedvav, I don't remember, but Lina, they'll try to check up on that. Remind me.
That was my
question. Whoa, okay. Yes. What? Again, a simple example. It says Vayava Haman, and I missed the word Haman. But they're making noise, so I just say the word Haman. Just say the word Haman. I don't have to say Vayavo. I heard Vayavo. I didn't hear the word Haman. They're busy making noise. I say the word Haman, and then I'll pick up with the next word afterwards. Yeah.
What if you find yourself in a situation that it's become very late and you've missed most of the Megillah readings? Then what do you do?
You go to Chabad of Rechavia or something, and say, I think they read Megillah on the hour or something like that. You try to find the late Megillah reading.
Can you read it to yourself?
From a cloth. You have to read from a cloth, and you have to know how to pronounce the words correctly.
Oh, well.
Well, well. Yes, okay.
If you miss a few words or a phrase or something, do you need to actually say the words or just read it?
No, you have to pronounce them. You have to enunciate the words. Yeah, it's not, sight reading is not sufficient. Yes?
When you need to say that, you need to say it with the correct chop?
Not necessarily. I mean, if you happen to know the chop, that's fine, but you're still Yeltsin without the chop. Okay. Fine, yes?
If you hear what the Valkor is saying, but he mumbles, so you hear the actual word he said, but you didn't, like, he didn't say the actual word or you didn't understand, are you still Yeltsin?
It depends how badly he's mumbling. In other words, a Balkore who enunciates words very clearly, but his mouth is faster than your ear. You know what I mean? In other words, you heard all the sounds, and he's really enunciating them clearly, and if you would play it slowly, you would actually hear it. But your mind and your... So then you would be Yotzei. But if he's really mumbling the words, he shouldn't be a Balkore. Fine, now let's go on to the other mitzvot hayom. Mikra Megillah is obviously the most famous one. The second one is Matanos Levyonim. Matanos Levyonim, okay, it's Matanot Le'evyonim. So Evyonim is plural, which means we have to give a matana to two different avyonim, two different poor people. Okay. How much of a matana do you have to give? Many poskim say it's sufficient to give a pruta to one pruta to one avyon and one pruta to another avyon. A pruta is not all that much money, and therefore a half a shekel is at least a pruta. You could give a half a shekel to one avyon, another half a shekel to a different avyon, and you're yotze. A number of poskim say that even if that may be technically okay, it's still proper to give him something of significance. And what's considered something of significance? So they used to say something that could buy him a minimal seuda, minimal meal. So in Eretz Yisrael, what's considered a minimal meal? Falafel. Right. So how much, if you went to a relatively inexpensive falafel place, how much could you get a whole falafel for? Can you get for 10 shekel? That's what they say. They say, they said that years ago, I was wondering if it still holds. And therefore, there are poskim who say that even though you can get away with giving a half a shekel and a half a shekel, if you can afford it, it would be nice to give 10 shekel and 10 shekel, meaning total of 20 shekel. And the chol ha-marba is a meshubach. Somebody who could give more, it's wonderful. In fact, poskim say very clearly that if you have a choice between spending a lot of money on matanos lavyonim or a lot of money on mishloach manos, clearly where should you be spending your money? On matanos lavyonim, and spend less on mishloach manos. Now, the money has to be given to the avyonim on who are celebrating the same day that you're celebrating. Meaning, if you're celebrating on Tetvav, it doesn't help to give to Avyonim who live in Ranana, because they're celebrating on Yadalit. And therefore, anybody here is celebrating on Tezvav, I assume all of you, or just about all of you, will be celebrating on Tezvav, so the money has to be given to Avyonim on Tezvav. And we all know that every day of the week, every day of the year, you can always see Avyonim. The one day you don't see Avyonim sometimes is the day that you need to, you know, where are my Avyonim all of a sudden today? So, and then you want to make sure that you're really giving your money to proper Avyonim. Therefore, what we do here every year is we collect money. The money can be handed over beforehand. We collect money from now, for soon after now, till shortly before Purim. And the money is collected. Rina Sofer, are you here? So, volunteered to be the person to collect the money, and therefore you can you'll be giving the money to, if you want to, you can give it to your own avyonim. The money is collected. Generally, we give it to hand it over to Mrs. Katz, who I think hands it over to Tomchei Shabbos of Harnof, and Tomchei Shabbos of Harnof knows people who really, really need the money. And that's fine. You don't, if you're giving two half shekels, you don't have to give two half shekels. You can put in one shekel, and that counts as two matanas. If you want to give 2 10 shekels, you can put in a 20 shekel bill. They're not going to tear it in half. It's counted the way that Gaboy make it tonight. So it's all like that. So whatever money you give, I strongly urge you to give at least a shekel. After that, kol ha-marba reizeh meshubach. And the money will be given out, Bezrat Hashem, on Purim Day to people who really, really need the money, really could use the money, and if you can give more, that's fine. If you decide you also want to celebrate on Yudalid, then you'll have to work out some arrangement to make sure that you're giving Matanos Lavyonim on Yudalid as well. Okay, questions regarding Matanos Lavyonim, yes?
If your money is put in like a big pot, how can you ensure that it's given to two Lavyonim?
Because they make a tanai. When the Gaboyim give out the money, they make a tanai. And they said that we are, first of all, they don't give the money to just two Avyonim. They hand it out to sometimes hundreds of Avyonim. And they make it tonight that everybody who gave money to Tomchei, let's say Tomchei Shabbos of Hanof, from Matanos Lavyonim, we are making it tonight that a pruta of, that one pruta of their money goes to at least one Avyon, another pruta of money goes to at least the second Avyon. And that's the tonight that they make, and that tonight works. That's the way it's done throughout in many, many places. People do that in Ramat Beit Shemesh. There's a Kupa Shel Tzedakah. They collect money from all over. And they make the Gabbai know how to make the tonight. Yeah.
Can your parents give for you and have your money?
It has to be your money. So, First of all, if your parents aren't in Yerushalayim, and you are in Yerushalayim, it's not going to help that they're giving it to people who live in Teaneck. That's not going to work. But if, whatever it is, if let's say you're in the same, they're celebrating the same day, they would have to be makne money. They can't give their money, because you have a chiv to give matanos levyoni. So they, from Zech Lemachtzit Hashenka, which I didn't talk about, that your parents can do. But Matanos Lavyonim has to be your money. Now, they can have somebody make a kinyan on the money and then make it your money, and then it can be done. Okay. Yeah? What? You have to give to, you can give to an organization. The money has to go to Avyonim. In other words, to give to Chai Lifeline is a wonderful tzedakah. It doesn't help for Matanos Lavyonim. Right? It has to go to poor people. Right. And they're building a local mikveh in your community. It's great staka, but it doesn't work from a ton of slavyonim. Yes.
So like next year, if we're back at home, then we have to give our own matan of slavyonim.
Correct. So you can take a dollar. By the way, if you want to, those of you who want to give American money, you can give American money, but only bills, not coins. Like coins are not changeable here so readily. So if you have a $100 bill, okay, let's go for it. If you have $100, you want to give Matanos Lavyonim, that's fine. But you can take that. If you're back in Chutz Laretz, you can take a dollar, $5, $10, whatever it is, and ask somebody, ask your father, ask somebody else. You know, the shul is collecting, whatever it is, but it should be your money. Yes.
They weren't like fake, like they were real. I could just like buy two pizzas and like give to like one, like a guy and his friend, and then like be okay.
Yes, Matanos Lavyonim doesn't have to be cash, right? It could be something that's worth money, you could be yotze that way. Yeah, make sure he's not celiac and gluten free and can't eat it. And
I don't know if you touched on this when you answered another Shabbos question, but isn't an issue with most of our money, especially here, is our parents' money?
That's correct.
Can we like ask them?
So my assumption is that your parents, within reason, allow you to use the money with your discretion. And therefore, if to be mekayim the mitzvah matanos lavyonim, you have to make a kinyan on their money by lifting it up, then I think that they would object, and I don't even think that you need to ask. I think that's the running assumption. They're happy that you do the mitzvah. Now, if you took $1,000 of their money and decided to give them matanos lavyonim, that's a different story. That may be something under the category of gezel. But
does that mean we should give them minimum or ask if we should give them more?
I think that you can, if you're not sure what your parents would say, then ask them. The minimum, yes. Minimum, you don't have to ask. If you know that your parents won't mind if you gave 20 shekel, then I think that that's, you know. But if you're not sure, ask. And if you want to give a lot more, you can ask them and say, how much money can I give to Matanos Lavyonim? It's going to a very good cause. But you should ask. Yes.
No.
Maser, well, put it this way. The minimum amount can't come from maser. But more than the minimum can. So in theory, what you can do is you can say a shekel is not from the Maisa money. That's the two prutos, right? And now I want to give him another 50 shekel for Maisa. That you can do.
But then it's not considered during like the mishuvah way.
No, you're still giving staka, right? Okay. Yeah.
So a couple questions in one. But if you have to give the money to the person, first of all, does it have to be exactly on the day? Can you do it like a day earlier?
You should know. We try. L'chatchila, the money should be handed over on Purim day.
So then, within that day, the first issue is it better to do it early in the morning so they can actually buy something for the meal as opposed to last minute? And second of all, if you're using a credit card, it doesn't necessarily go in at that moment. Like if it's a...
So I know that, let's say, in the Kupa Shel Tzedakah of Harnav, people often give in their credit cards the day before Purim, even sometimes Purim morning. They keep track of the credit card. It's their busiest day of the year by far. They have some very, very fine people who lend them cash, lots and lots of cash. Lend them money so that they can then give out the money on Purim. And I mean, they give out, I think last year they gave out 500,000 shekel on Purim day, something like that. It's big money that they give out to poor people. People lend them cash. They give envelopes with cash to, 2,000 shekel to this family, 3,000 shekel to that family, depending on who needs what. And then eventually when the credit card clears, they're able to pay the people back. It's a big, big operation, these people. And because people are still donating, they're going for mincha and they're still donating money, it never ends. They can't say, okay, we're finished in the poor morning. So that's what they do. Okay. Next, Mitzvah Tayom. If you'll just wait a little bit. Okay. Mishloach Manos. Here it's Mishloach Manot Ish L'Re'ehu. A man to his friend in the singular. But it's Manot in plural. So the minimal mitzvah is to give two portions to one friend. And your yotze. So you have to give two portions to one friend and yotze. Again, Mishloach Manos should be on the day of Purim to somebody who's celebrating that day, that you're celebrating. So Mishloach Manos Ish L'Re'ehu. Question is, what's a portion? Giving somebody a peanut and a raisin is not enough. Okay. Say, it's one. I want peanut, one raisin. No. It has to be a portion that's considered ra'oi to be mitkabed. It has to be like you're giving a portion. So if I were to give somebody a piece of potato kugel, if I was making, if I was at a Shabbos meal and I was giving out a piece of potato kugel, it should be one. What's the size of a piece of potato kugel that you would give a person? And that's considered a portion. So a sucking candy is not a portion. If you gave a bag of sucking candies, that would certainly be a portion. But you can't take 20 sucking candies and say 10 is one portion and 10 is the other. It has to be two different foods. The very widespread custom of making sure that they're two separate brachas, to the best of my knowledge, has absolutely no basis in halacha. It's clear that somebody made this up and everybody bought into it. But if you want to give somebody a piece of meat and a bottle of Coca-Cola, even though they're both shahakol, you certainly yotzei the mitzvah. We do paskin l'chatchila that, maybe not l'chatchila, but we do paskin that it should be something that's ready to be eaten. You shouldn't give somebody a piece of, like I brought you a raw chicken, even if it's dead, or you want to do psik resha, whatever it is. No, it should be something that's cooked, ready to be eaten. And that's the story with Mishloach Manos. What else do we need to know? There's some who say it's better to give it yourself. There's some who say it's better to give it al yaday shaliach. Some people do both, one by themselves and one by the shaliach. Either way, presumably you're going to be yotzei the mitzvah. If people want to give a joint mishloach manot, right? Then to be yotzei with that mishloach manot, let's say two people want to give mishloach manot to Mrs. Isaacson. That's wonderful. Well, she celebrates Yodalit. To Mrs. Katz, who celebrates Tetzvav. So if two people want to, and they want that to be the one they yotzei with, so that mishloach manot has to have four portions in it. Two from Shendi and two from Gitti. Right? So if Shendi and Gitti want to combine and give to Mrs. Katz, so they have to make sure that they have four portions. Now, once you gave one mishloach manot, kedat v'kedin, you can do whatever you want to. You can give presents to everybody. You want to give all your roommates a peanut and a raisin, go ahead. As long as one person got a real mishloach manot, the rest you can give everybody a peanut, a raisin, or whatever you want to do. So, but the minimum, you have to have at least one that's kedat v'kedin. Okay, questions regarding mishloach manot. Yes?
This may be way too technical for now, but basically, I have family friends going back to America before Purim, so I really want to get mishloach manot to my parents on Purim Day. Would I be yotzei through that?
No, because if you're celebrating, it depends. If you're celebrating Yudalid, also, your parents are celebrating Yudalid.
Yeah.
Right. So if you want to, if you're celebrating Yudalid because you're sleeping over in Ranana by Aunt Shuli's house.
Do they have
to
be also be celebrating that day?
For you to be yotzei, they have to be celebrating the day that you're commemorating.
So it would just be a fake cute thing?
Yes, which is the same thing that, they have all these organizations and people come and they deliver mishloach manos here 2 days before Purim and everybody gets, not everybody, some people get these baskets. It's very nice. It's very this, it's very that. It's not really mishloach manos. But it's nice. It's people like getting it. And, some very fine Jews make a good business out of all of this. And it's very good. But it's not, it's not really mishloach manos. It's very nice. It's a nice gesture, but it's not mishloach manos. Yes?
Is a poor person obligated to give matanos in yom?
Yes, but he can literally give a pruta, assuming that he has. Okay. If somebody gives him, he can give somebody else. You know, the truth is, I know that this sounds illogical, but there's always somebody who's poorer than you. Now, how could that be? Somehow or another, it always works out that way. Yes? No?
Oh, would I be okay with giving one chocolate up my roommate, even though we live together?
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
I thought you were putting it to someone else.
No, you can give. Question, well, the husband can give to a wife, wife can give to the husband. If it's all joint property, that would be a different story. But again, if you and your roommates share something, like you jointly bought a potato kugel, so you can't then give her, you know. What you can do is if you can cut the potato kugel in half and then give her your half, but not her half. Okay. Yeah. All right. One more question before we go on. Yes. Yeah, you can do that.
Okay.
Now, I always wanted, you know, the bottle of wine that you have in your house that you really don't want, and you always give it away. I always wanted to put a secret marking on it to see if I ever got it back, because they give to babies, give to seniors. So it comes all the way back. I think the Kichels had something like that, but that's only if you see the Kichels. You don't even know what the Kichels are. Okay. The fourth mitzvah of the day is Suda. Right, there's a mitzvah of Suda on. There's a mitzvah of Suda on Purim. The mitzvah of Suda on Purim is during the day. Right? The minhag in general is to... it's not the minhag. Halach is really that the Suda, most of the Suda should be eaten before, when it's still Purim. You can continue it into the night. But you shouldn't be sitting down to your Suda 10 minutes before Shkia, before sunset. Mostly you sit down an hour and a half before, so even though it can continue late into the night, but most of the Suda should be during the day. There are those who are makpid to have meat at the Suda. Not everybody agrees that it's necessary. Preferably, unless you're gluten-free, you should wash for the Suda. Should be a Suda with lechem. And you say Al HaNisim, even if you're benching after nightfall, you would still say Al HaNisim. What else? In terms of dress on Purim, there are two things. First of all, the Ramah writes that the minhag is to wear Big Day Shabbos on Purim, L'chavad Hayom, and therefore, and the Ramah also quotes a custom about wearing costume. So if you're in costume, you're in costume. But if you're not in costume, right, then really a person should wear nice clothing on, it doesn't have to be your fanciest outfit, or your, if you're British, your smartest outfit, but you should wear nice clothing on Purim. If you're in costume, you're in costume. Regarding costumes, those of you in Yisrael Mitzvah know we spent a bit of time discussing this. There's a big machloket haposkim whether one is allowed to cross-dress on Purim because of the simcha of the yom, men in women's clothing, women in men's clothing. Generally speaking, that's an Issa Daraita. You're allowed to cross-dress. Some posts can allow it. Some posts can speak very strongly against it. If you're going to do it, you should just make sure that, for you, that you are it's still recognizable that you are female. To somebody to get dressed up so much that the others can't tell what gender they are, that's the poskim are b'chlal not happy with. So you should make sure that you do that. And there's plenty of costumes that you can wear even if you're not cross-dressing. Finally, an issue that I'm not going to talk very much about because it's going to be very short. The Gemara does say Chayiv Inish Lefsumei Bepuri Ad Veloyada Beinor Haman Levaruch Mordechai. Rashi explains that the person has to be Mishtaker on Purim. The Ramah says that the minig is to drink a little bit more than you usually do and then take a nap on Purim day. And while you're napping, you don't know the difference between Aruham and Baruch Mordechai. I want to make it very clear that MMY rules apply on Purim, which means there is no alcoholic drinking even on Purim. There is no heter to do so. Here in MMY, there are quite a number of very prominent poskim who say that the whole inyan of Chayiv Inish Lefsumei Bepuri applies only to men. In Dakim Shel Noshim Lishtos, or Nevensol, or Sternbuch, and others. So it is total ixnei. You can have plenty of grape juice if you want. That's perfectly fine. But the alcohol, as usual, is totally off limits. Any questions? You can ask privately. Please bring up the attendance sheet. Have a wonderful day, everybody.